Here in the studio, we're doing massive amounts of construction right now, so I am bathed in sawdust with splinters in my feet, and it smells like burnt metal. But it will eventually start to look like a proper studio and or basement suite by the time I am done. So the scotch is extra. It's got that essence of pine. It's got that 2x4 flavor mixed into it right now. This is Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, does your Guinness taste like wood chips?
No. Also, didn't have a chance to stop the liquor store after the tournament, so I'm drinking vodka Pepsi again.
Oh, well, hey, not that bad. Obviously, today... Oh, what's that?
Oh, I was just going to say that if you have, shards of wood in your foot, then, you know, we're even because of when I broke the glass raging on Tyranids and had shards of glass.
Oh, yeah. So. I guess that's... not quite the same. Less funny.
Well, that's because you weren't raging your basement, and then I decided, fuck this, and I just started ripping it apart with my hands.
So you are playing in a tournament right now. Yes. They're in Cowtown.
Mm-hmm.
And playing your demons, doing some fantasy, roughly the same list. Things are going pretty well.
I do want to give a quick shout out to the Ultimate Gamer crew. And Mark in particular, because he's a listener and he bought me a shot of Yag because they had no Guinness. But because the whole thing is the event is called Warhammered.
Yes.
It's being held in a community center with an open bar. Everyone got 2 drink tickets and then, you know, just buy your drinks from then on. So flashbacks of Vegas, pretty fun. But it's really good. Talking about the fantasy side of things, the level of detail on all the tables is top notch. They're all themed, very similar to Astronomicon. So,
right.
Each table has its own scenario and it is its own theme. So far, my 3 tables, I've played on a Khemri table with beautiful, you know, Khemri Egyptian style scenery. I played on the River City table, which was just buildings and a big river going through it, which, again, very interesting scenario. I loved it. I thought that was the best scenario I've played all day. And then I played in an orc encampment table chasing squigs. So, just a shout-out because it's super fun, 3 games in and 2 to go tomorrow.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a Warhammer weekend. I got a game in against Tom. Playing his orcs, we did about 2,500 points of fantasy. It was a good game. I was able to pull out a win there at the end, but it was a hell of a grind on both sides because he did have an all Savage Orc army. So,
good lord,
yeah, it was really really messy. And but for the most part, other than just him screwing up a couple of his spells a few times, and there just being a lot of laughs, and the fact that he brought a bag of chips. And, like, just didn't eat any the whole time and just kept encouraging me to eat chips like I was sure that they were poisoned. But, but yes, that's the weekend so far. And then just back to work and things like that. But let's get on to the topic at hand today here, which is Storm of Magic, which was released this last week here. Obviously, we've kind of been talking about Storm of Magic on and off here on the podcast so far. And as we do with any Games Workshop codex / expansion / odd models high quality bullshit release, it's time for us to talk about it here on the show. So we're gonna kind of forego higher learning today because there is a lot of stuff to cover, and I think that we'll get right into it, as we have been for the last few, to actually talk about the book itself. It's very thick, and when you open it up, you instantly want to play Twister.
Yes, actually, the funny thing about that was on the drive back from the tournament, because I brought my book to read in between games, Terry opened it up and she's like, "What's this?" I'm like, "It's a spinner," and I flicked it, and immediately my daughter in the back, who's, you know, 2.5, is just like, "Alora Flick Spinner! Alora Flick Spinner!" And then she was getting mad because I wouldn't hand her the book to play.
Yeah.
My kids
were the same way. They saw me spin it and they thought that it was like the greatest thing in the world. And I kept telling them, I'm just like, please, it's Games Workshop. It's built into a book. Like, I swear, another 10 spins and this thing is coming off. So I'm just like, I'm not eager to overspin this. I think it's going to be one of those... only when you actually need it am I going to spin these things. But I do think that it is kind of an interesting aspect of the game, because obviously we always talk about when you're going to play these games, having your books, having your armies, having everything that you need to play the game, dice, measuring tapes, all that kind of shit. They've now incorporated this as a vital part of the game, and it's part of the rule book. So, like, you can't really get away without having the spinner. I mean, like, there are ways to randomize it, but it is just part of the book. Now, obviously, it is a hardcover. It opens in a very cool way so that the spinner is kind of off to the side and it's not getting lost when you're flicking through the rule book. And as I noticed, that extra page does make a good placeholder when you're trying to save your place in terms of reading. You just kind of jam that in between and you're good to go. The other thing that I'll give them kudos for is the magnet between the two pieces of the cover. Holding
Well,
everything
yeah, I
together
mean,
when you
it's.
close it. It just, you know what? Good on you guys for just a little bit of ingenuity and just proper thinking, making sure that this thing, it doesn't turn into some messy phone book thing that as it ages, it just gets thicker and thicker. But yeah, other than that, I mean, right off the bat, one of the things that I noticed about the book was lots of new artwork in the book, which is really, really cool.
Beautiful, beautiful artwork too. I
Just
thought,
tons of new artwork, and it's not just them reusing their artwork. Obviously, just like the other books, it's full color the whole way through, which is great. And the other thing that I was really surprised at is when I saw the size of it in the store, when I actually went to go pick it up, my first thought was just like, oh my God, that thing is, I expected a codex.
yeah.
And when I saw how thick it was, I was just like, Jesus Christ, it's 60 books or $60. It's probably going to be half of the book is just going to be bullshit fluff that I'm not going to read most of it. But I opened it up and it's just like, no, fluff is only the first 20 pages. And most of that's pictures. Like, they really, really do kind of keep the fluff to a minimum in this book. And it really does feel a lot more like just a slimmed down core rule book. I mean, they could easily make this the same thickness as the Warhammer rule book, the hardcover, just by adding more fluff, which is typically what you would see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. The fluff is very much to a minimum, and they really just packed it full of all of the rules. And I mean, the interesting thing with Storm of Magic is the actual rules to, turn a game of Warhammer into a game of Storm of Magic is super short. Like there's like what, 15, 20 pages, and absolutely everything else is just the cool shit that you're expected to buy with it, whether they be the super over the top spells your wizards can cast with the arcane fulcrums, or the super over the top fucking
Monsters.
monsters and
Zotes.
magic items,
Zotes.
zotes. Hey, I'm looking forward to being able to rock my fucking Forge World Greater Demons now. And for that one Chaos Dwarf player that's been sticking it out, good on you. Your two monsters,
You'll be loving
are.
life. Okay, so we'll kind of get into the beast a little bit more as we get to that point. As we said, there's a ton of stuff to go through. I just want to go first off into just kind of first impressions. For me, the first impressions that I've seen so far, again, the lack of fluff stood out. The new artwork really stood out. I love that new picture of Balthazar Gelt. I think that that's really, really cool.
What page was that? Because the dragons on pages 10 and 11, I thought was the best piece of artwork they have ever done ever.
Page 19. There's just that little corner picture of Balthazar Gelt. It's just a really cool picture of a character that has really only had one picture
Oh,
kind of
wow,
up
that
until
is
this
awesome.
point. Yeah, it's just well done. It makes him look like not the man in the Iron Mask with a big fluffy collar. Like, he actually kind of looks like a wizard now as opposed to just like a really, really flamboyant S&M fiend. So, I mean, for the most part, like, that's what really stood out for me. As I got into the rules and as I started reading through them, it felt very comprehensive. Like, it felt like they were kind of clean and straightforward. They were giving you what you needed. And this is really kind of more of an addition to Warhammer 8th Edition as opposed to an expansion. And I want to make a distinction between the two there. Because an expansion is typically something that takes an aspect of the game and then basically builds its own game around it. Right? This is a bit more of an add-on in the sense that they're taking the magic phase and they're taking certain types of scenarios and they're giving them new goals and aims. Like, you kind of have to start tailoring your army to playing Storm of Magic just the way that you would tailor your army to playing certain scenarios in 8th edition. Obviously, like, there are things that you can add into your armies. And as I kept reading, the other big impression that I had was, this is the greatest book in the world for fantasy players who've been playing for a really long time, have a lot of old models, or have multiple painted armies. I have 5 painted armies right now, and for me, it's like, this is gold. I've got so much extra shit that I can mix and match between my stuff. And the fact that I also have a Vampire Counts army means that, like, I can mix and match my Vampire Counts with my other armies, as opposed to actually playing my Vampire Counts for Storm of Magic and trying to just build them with all of these extra creatures. I thought that that was actually really, really cool, just from the fun aspect, you know, just being able to pull that shit out and put it on the table and kind of play those allies rules and kind of mix and match a little bit. I think that that's a lot of fun. And with the allies rules that we had in 8th edition, it almost shows a little bit of foresight when they were building 8th edition that they knew that Storm of Magic was going to involve a lot of allies as well. And the trusted allies and the fragile alliances and those types of rules would actually be a huge selling point to, you know, taking these packs, as they call them in Storm of Magic, and using them on the table and knowing that they're not really set in stone, like they could kind of crumble at any moment. So really, really cool stuff in that respect. So what about you, Nathan?
No, absolutely. Fuck.
I'm going to have to just start like a running counter, or we need like a swear jar for you for every time you say, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, that's your brain's default setting. It's like Nathan's neutral.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, that is what my brain is just like, okay, need to
think. You just said it again.
Something. Yeah, no, absolutely. Must think. I agree, though. You know, Storm of Magic isn't so much an expansion. It's not going to fundamentally change any of the core rules. All it's really doing is it's taking the magic phase, it's taking the size of your armies and just the pure shenanigans, and it's just throwing it in. And what I really like about it, and it was something that Danny said on his blog, which was, it is quite clear that this isn't meant to be a competitive game. Silly things can happen. I can buy a magic item that lets me literally rearrange the board, where it's just like, nope, you can take that whole section of a rearrangeable board and swap it with any other section you want in any direction that you want. And you're just like, really? Like, it just, you can't say that this game is built to be anything other than a beer and pretzels kind of shenanigans game when you can literally fuck with people in that way. And I mean, we were talking about it before. There's a magic item that's basically the character killer, you know, sword, where it's just like, no, I spent 100 points to get a magic item that says that, as soon as I get into combat, I must accept challenges, I must issue challenges, and as soon as I kill someone, I myself am killed, and the sword randomly goes to a different character or unit champ.
From either side. From
either army. So it's just like, if I just want to be a dick, where it's just like, my warlock engineer for my Skaven has this 100-point sword because he's going to run in, accept the challenge, kill someone because it boosts your stats, and then die. And then it goes to someone else. And you're just like,
yeah, you automatically die after it goes away. And there are a lot of items like that in the game. I'm going to jump in and just say that I don't necessarily agree that this is wholly not for tournaments, because there were a couple things that I saw in this book that really kind of made me stop and think, like, you know, if I went out to a tournament, and everybody always talks about, like, you want tournaments to be fun and you want people to have a good time, like, I could see there being, like, a bonus round, you know, in a tournament that is Storm of Magic. And, like, it's not worth as many points, or the scoring works in a very different way. Like, massacres aren't worth as much, or something of that nature, where they're just like, okay, so we're on to the bonus round. Like, this is just to add up a couple of extra points. Like, let the shenanigans go. You know, like, be the dick that you always wanted to be. There's no sportsmanship score. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that kind of fun aspect of the game that Storm of Magic brings would actually be kind of a welcome change to a tournament, because you also get to play a big game that can end in like 2 turns if a fucking mega magic vortex just rolls through an entire army. And then you're just like, well, okay.
The fire vortex of magma shooting. Ugh.
And that's the big thing, is it's just like, well, I didn't lose any points. My opponent gained an extra 2 victory points onto his total scores. But it's just like, wouldn't that be fun? Like, wouldn't that be fun to just be able to kind of have like a let's fuck around type game built into a tournament as like a bonus round? But I mean, obviously that is something that would take a little bit of extra time to kind of work out the logistics of it. But I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think it would be fun to bring that extra, 625 points to a tournament worth of scrolls and magic items and monsters and shit like that, and just play a Storm of Magic game.
I don't know. I disagree. Like, for me, when I was reading through the book, I thought to myself that this edition, this game, Storm of Magic, is exactly like Lord of the Rings, in that there is a douche line. It is very obvious where that douche line is. And if you have two players who are willing to stay on one side of the douche line and not cross it, that this could be a fucking fantastic game where everyone's going to have fun. And as you said, you could just have this crazy shenanigan stuff.
Right.
But if one person crosses the douche line, it's just not going to be fun, because there are so many over-the-top things. And the other thing is because you have these monster spells where it's just like, if I throw my six dice with my, my wind in ascendancy and all of my crazy bonuses, and I get one of those remove from play spells off, it's just like, unless you're playing a really large game where you can afford to lose a whole unit, that's going to suck. Like, that's the game. There's no coming back from it. And the other thing is a wizard on an arcane fulcrum is basically unkillable unless you can smoke him with a cannonball shot. So it's just like one of those things. Or he just miscasts and explodes himself.
Every miscast up there with those big spells is a double miscast.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking hilarious. But okay, let's get into the book here a little bit. Obviously, we talk about the rules. One of the key rules to this game is that every game of Storm of Magic is played around these magic fulcrums. And these magic fulcrums, as our good friend GW will tell you, are these four awesome pieces of scenery that you can get for 85 bucks a pop that you got to paint up. And the rules for them support the fact that you need to buy these pieces of terrain. And that was one of the first things that I ran into while I was reading through this book that really kind of started to rub me the wrong way, was the fact that I kind of thought to myself when I started reading the magic fulcrums that, like, oh, okay, well, I'll just use some markers to say, like, okay, this is a magic fulcrum. Like, I've got a little magical mystery that I play with on my table. And it's just like, oh yeah, that can work. But then they're just like, oh, they follow the rules for buildings, and this is the way that they work, and your guy has to physically be able to stand on top of it. And I'm like, really? Like, that's a rule? The rule is he has to be able to fucking stand on top of it? Like, I've got a tower that would work great for it, but it's got a peak on the top. So my guy could not stand on the top, which means I can't use it as a fucking magic fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of that aspect of them writing the terrain into the rules in such an inane way.
Oh, dude, but I mean, writing terrain into the rules is all over that book. Like, how many spells are there where it's just like,
I'm getting to that.
you cast this spell, and now you may place a citadel hill anywhere you want. Or you cast this, and that makes three blood forests.
Right.
So place a citadel wood wherever you want. And you're just like, come on.
And that was the really big thing about it, was it wasn't like back in the Wood Elves army book when they said, okay, you can bring a piece of forestry, where you can either buy a citadel forest or you can do like a 6-inch circular forest. And they made it very clear that, like, it's 6 inches, can't be any bigger. Please use this. Like, this is the limits of where you can go. In this book, they didn't do any of that. They were just like citadel hill. So you can't really go and like make your own hill, because some dude's going to make like a 15-inch hill and go put it up in the middle of some guy's army, so everybody in his army takes strength 10 hit if they take initiative or if they fail an initiative test. But yes, I noticed that as well, and that really just, again, continually rubbed me the wrong way, because every spell that they could throw in there to affect terrain or add terrain or buy terrain kind of all came down to this idea of, oh yeah, you totally have to just go buy all this terrain to play the game. Now, I purchased the rulebook. I purchased the deck of magic cards because I like the holder. Mm-hmm. And I haven't tested it yet, but it looks to me that I would be able to fit all 8 of the Lore of Magic cards in there, and probably a couple of extra cards as well. And just to segue actually a little bit into this, I was a bit disappointed with not the case, because the case is brilliant. I like the case quite a bit. But the actual cards themselves, Like, I get that they had to fit them all in, so they had to make them a little bit thinner, but they're quite flimsy.
Oh yeah,
Did
like I
you
bought
pick
mine,
those
but
up?
mine's still. I did, but mine's still in the cellophane. Like the, you know, that
Yeah,
was the thing is I
they're.
went yesterday, picked up everything, but didn't really get a chance to do anything other than like crack the cellophane off between rounds today of the rule book. So I mean, I haven't looked at the
No,
cards yet.
they're good, and they got pictures on the back, and they've got all the stuff that you love from the Lore of Magic cards, which is really great. But obviously, they had to cram them down to fit them in, and so like they are a bit flimsy. Like I feel like it would be, it's not like the other cards where they're really good and rigid, and you feel like they're gonna last you a long time. Like these ones, it feels like they're gonna bend and bow, and they're just not gonna really do. Last the way that you want them to last. So I was a bit disappointed with regards to that, but again, I didn't even buy it for the cards. I bought it for the fucking case because it looks like a little magic Bible. okay, so again, the fulcrums. I think one of the things that maybe people are going to start talking about quite a bit here is where you can substitute the fulcrums. For me, I was actually looking at using the plastic craters that came in the 4th edition Warhammer 40,000 starter kit and just taking those circular craters, painting them up, doing red and blue and green in the cracks and bride rushing them and draw like a pentagram on it or whatever, and just say like there, magic fulcrum, it's, it acts like a building and only one guy can attack at a time because they talked about all the magical energy swirling around it and bullshit like that. So, I mean, like, I think that we're going to see a lot of that kind of stuff for this game where it's just kind of people making do. I don't foresee a lot of people going out there and buying all four of those fucking towers so that they can have all four magic fulcrums because you need four
Well,
magic
yeah,
fulcrums to play this game. There's no way around it.
that's what I was gonna say is I was just like, fuck, the rules are written where it's just like set up before they even talk about the size of your fucking army. They're just like, no, you need to get four of these magic fulcrums and you need one per table quarter and they have to be basically the I don't understand why they didn't say just place it right in the middle, because it's like you can't be within 6 of a board edge, 6 of the center, or 18 of another one on a 4x6 board. So you're just like, they're all in the center of the table quarters. Okay, we get it. But no, that was exactly what they said, where it's like they're just trying to sell scenery. And you know what?
They're just trying to sell scenery.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know what? The fantasy scenery that they make, I think, is top-notch. I love their fantasy scenery 100 times more than their 40K building sets.
Yes.
It does look good, but for fuck's sake, the fact that you guys literally came up with an entire expansion saying buy our shit, and I mean, we're hooked. We buy your shit. We have armies. We're already in. So if your buildings aren't selling, if your scenery isn't selling, maybe you should get out of scenery and not write a whole rule book that says buy more of it.
Buy more scenery, yeah. I agree, but I really do think that the longtime gamers are very industrious people. We will make do with what we have, as opposed to going out and buying and painting all of this crap. I mean, I have an extra tower. I'm probably going to paint it up for this specifically so that I do have an additional magic fulcrum. Honestly, like I said, I'm planning on using those craters and just saying like, yeah, this is my magic fulcrum. Can he stand on it? Yes, he can. Boink, and then it just uses the rules of the building and all the whole like one person can attack at a time and he gets all the bonuses for being defended in it and all that kind of garbage. But moving on past that aspect of the game, the scenarios and the deployment and the way that you integrate this with the current composition for Warhammer 8th edition is brilliant. I think that they do an excellent job in making it very, very simple and straightforward for people to understand because they don't have a lot of rules. The rules are to play magical or to play Storm of Magic, you need four magic fulcrums, you use this scenario, you build a normal list, and then 25% of those point costs you get as additional points on top of it to use with mega items. Mega monsters, packs, and all that
Packs.
kind of shit to make it work. Now, that I really, really liked. And that's kind of what got me excited about the game because, I think to myself, like, oh, you know what? I'm actually really excited to play my ogres now because my ogres have some really cool spells that give them a lot of interesting boosts. They have access to some very cool items, but more than anything, they have access to some cool unit choices that they wouldn't normally have had access to. And what I really also liked on top of that was there were no restrictions to the monsters, to the bound monsters.
Yeah.
It wasn't like White Lions of Krace, only High Elves and Empire can take them. No, it's just like, I think that that's really cool that I can put these things into my armies and kind of walk away feeling pretty good about it. So for the most part, the actual composition and the actual layout of how you're going to be playing this game with what you already own for Warhammer, it was actually done very, very well. And that's why I kept saying before that it's an add-on. It feels like more of an add-on than anything else. You know, I can grab my giant out of my Ogre Kingdoms, and I can grab my trolls out of my Orc army, and I can grab a pack of vampires and a vampire lord out of my Vampire Counts army and put that into my Ogre army, or I can put that into my Lizardman army or my High Elf army, and it's just like, that's fun to me. I think that that's really cool. On top of all the additional stuff, it actually gets me thinking about conversions again, where I can start kind of doing these things, putting them together. You know, I never owned a Truthsayer or a Dark Emissary, but it's just like, ah, perfect. I want one of these now.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Not the Truthsayer, though, because I'm not gay. I'm talking about a Dark Emissary.
What, you don't like his 8-minute abs? Like, come on, dude. Like, that Truthsayer, he is ripped.
He's like a thin, tall Dwarf Slayer groupie. Look at his fucking hair. He's like the ultimate warrior, but more homosexual.
Is that even possible? No, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, apparently it is. We call it a Truthsayer.
That nice. You know, I just totally get the other side of it. As I said, when I look at this, you know, it really just feels like Apocalypse to me, where they're just like, oh, you don't want to know why you can get a, you know, with the pack, so you can spend money and you can buy a mountain chimera. Everyone needs a chimera. Oh, you don't? Well, then you need a manticore. Totally. Buy our manticore kit. You know, and it felt like Apocalypse, where it's just like, oh, you don't want a Baneblade? Then you want a Stompa. Look. Everyone needs to stop. And that's really just what it feels like when they're like, let's tack on these points. Because admittedly, you could just buy, you know, if you have multiple armies like you do, you're just like, great, I'll just take a little bit of everything and I'm done. And you know what? That's great. And sure, because luckily demons are my second army. So if I wanted to, I could make my parent wood elf list, although God knows why I'd want to do that. And packed in my demons to make up, you know, some of those points. But you know, again, it totally doesn't grab my attention. As I was looking at it, I'm just like, basically I'm going to take one of these over the top items and I'm going to buy one of their monster kits, ideally to go with the four fulcrums that I did buy, you know? So, I mean, for me, the silver lining of Storm of Chaos for me is I'm just like, at least they released that gorgeous, Sorcerer of Tzeentch model that I'm going to use as a herald for my demon army. And everything else can, like, I just,
but
I don't
like,
you've
care. Got
like,
but
I don't
you've
even,
got
I don't like it. I don't dislike it. But for me, I'm just like, I just don't care. I don't know if I'll ever play a game of Storm of Magic unless we do it for our podcast and I'm forced into it. Like, I'm just like, I have no desire to play it. Like, it just feels like a shitty add-on sale, you know? Like, it's when you go to the used car dealership and you're like, all right, fine. I'll buy your fucking car. And what do you mean I need the undercoat and I should get this and you're going to tack on that? And that's really all this feels like, is just a cheap attempt from Games Workshop to try to sell crap.
Wow.
I mean, you know, and that's why I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah, no, it's
I
the
really
exact
just don't care.
Like, cause I was thinking about the shit that you own for fantasy and I was just like, you own a dragon, which is awesome. Cause you can do a shit ton with that dragon.
Dude,
there's so many dragon options.
I own like two or three dragons, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. But like, you've got dragons, which is phenomenal because they've got so many awesome dragon options that you can take in there. You've got magic users. You've got a Hydra. You've got demons, and demons are one of the packed armies, which is really cool. So, I mean, you can put together this mishmashed thing, which actually kind of makes your high elves start to feel, or I'm sorry, your wood elves start to feel like you're making up for the faults in the army, right? I mean, like,
because wood elves have always needed a bloodthirster to be competitive.
Well, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the case, but kind of more what I'm saying is just like, you know, you can fit all of those things into your army that you wouldn't have necessarily had before and feel a little bit more confident in the fact that, you know, you're going to have the more punch, you're going to have more mobility, you're going to have more of that kind of monster presence on the table where you're not just spamming Treemon. And obviously, and honestly, I was really surprised to see you feeling this way even about your Wood Elves, because there's a lot of clues in this book to what we're going to see in the next Wood Elf army book. I don't even know if you noticed them.
No, I didn't. I mean, the big thing that stood out to me was we all get to see what dwarf magic is going to look like.
Yes,
when they
that's come. Another clue.
Is I was just like, oh my god, really? This is what the dwarf magic phase is going to be? Poor dwarves, like that. Oh, I was looking at that, and I'm just like, they're getting the fucking shaft with those ancestral rune bullshit.
Well, I don't think that that's necessarily a shaft, because I think that like that's the big end of things, which it it can definitely be really damaging, and the way that your arcane miscasts work is kind of the shaft. But I think when we start seeing the dwarves in the new book using this similar rune system, where each successful rune hit boosts the abilities of each specific spell, I think that what we're going to see in the dwarf book is no miscast whatsoever. Like, the only time there's miscast here is when you're casting what is essentially a cataclysm spell or whatever the fuck they call
it. No, I mean, but I mean, for me, that wasn't even it. It's just when you look at the system, they still have the cap on how many dice they can use. So, I mean, let's be honest. I'm rolling 4d6 for power dice. You know, basically, it's your normal magic system doubled, right? So I get 4, you get the best 2. The Rune Lord or Rune Smith can only take 6 of those dice, and then he rolls them up, and
I think you're jumping the gun. You're putting the cart before the horse here, because you don't even know what kind of abilities Rune Smiths are going to have in the new book. There's probably going to be a lot of mitigation in that.
But you know what? If the casts, but my point is the cast system, because on a 1, 2, or 3, it does nothing. On a 4 or a 5. You know, okay, it has it and can potentially be dispelled, and on a 6, yay, it goes through. But that's the point, is like with a 6 dice limit, which this book has, and this is why I look at that system, and I hope to God that isn't, you know, verbatim what the new army book is going to have. Because otherwise, poor dwarves. Because that's why I'm just like, so basically, I as the army dispelling it can use as many dice as I want, and I can look at it and just be like, oh, you got 2 successfuls and a 6, so your 6 will go through. I'll take 4 dice because statistically I should be able to get 2 4+ on those, and look, I cancel it out. You threw 6 dice to get 1 effect.
Right.
And that's why I'm just like, please God, don't make that the dwarf magic system for their new book, because otherwise, poor dwarves. Like, it's such a shit substitute for what they have
now. Well, they don't have anything now.
Well, nothing in the magic phase, and that's what the Anvil of Doom was supposed to
Well, I would argue that, but I don't want to get.
But I mean, the Anvil has always been the mitigation in 6th and 7th edition dwarf books. Games Workshop has just, again, never really figured out how to make it work, because in 6th edition you struck runes in the magic phase and everyone just dispelled them. In 7th edition, it happened in the shooting phase, but they made it so hard to cast anything at ancient power. It meant that it's just like, for 500 points, one unit a turn can have one okay ability, and no one took it.
Right. So I don't disagree with you. At that point, with the Anvil of Doom and shit like that. I think that, honestly, the only reason why it's a page long at this point is just to explain what needs to be explained to fit with the current army book that we're seeing right now in 8th edition for dwarves. I think that when you actually see the Dwarf Army book come out, and when they give us this new rune system that is essentially going to work in a slightly different way as magic would, but they will actually take part in the magic phase, I honestly think that you're going to see a lot of mitigation in that sense. It's going to be very similar to kind of like Empire, where like your warrior priests are really mitigating your dispel phase, and you've got armies. What's another? I'm not even going to get into it with dwarves. But anyways, I really do feel like I think it's cool the way that they're doing it. I agree with you that right now it does look kind of dismal, but like I have no misconceptions about the fact that I'm fairly certain that we are actually going to see a lot of cool rune smith and rune lord abilities that are going to make that hit really, really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But okay, the other little nuggets of, forecasting for the Wood Elves was there is no magic for Lore of Athelorn. It's just Wood Elves. They're just like Wood Elves get some these extra spells, but there's no Lore of Athelorn thrown in.
Just like they did for Lizardmen and Bretonnia.
Yes. But I mean, at this point, Lizardmen don't have their own lore anyways, so it's no surprise.
Yep.
And obviously Britonia also don't have their own lore, but they just kind of threw it in there. So you can see that, you know, in the next book, Athaloran's gone. They're just going to have access to the lores of magic, or specific lores of magic. And then they're going to get certain bonuses to it. That's what I'm suspecting. And then if anything,
but I mean, that would help the army
immensely.
Cause I mean, if level one and two wizards have access to life and beasts,
I think
all of a sudden you don't have to spend 400 points to get Wizard's Wild Form.
Right. Well, and I think that what you're actually going to see looking at this kind of stuff, if I have to guess, is that it's actually going to be very similar to like vampire counts and high elves. And I think dark elves as well, honestly, where they have that one spell that they always know. Mm-hmm. And that one spell will be tree singing, because it was very clear in the lore of Athaloran from day one that they thought tree singing was a great idea, and they just had to make up a lore around it to make it work. And everything else in that lore was pointless. So I think what you're going to see in the new Wood Elf book is every Wood Elf magic user is automatically going to know tree singing as like they just know it. And then they're going to have access to the rest of the lores of magic, primarily life. And they're probably going to get a lot of bonuses to casting with life, the way that we're seeing stuff in this book, where there are a lot of characters who are heavy, heavy, heavy into lore of life casting. And they get a lot of bonuses to it, like the Zotes and a couple of other characters that are in there as well. The other thing was the Great Stag, D3 impact hits.
Oh, that's interesting. Yep. No, I hadn't caught that.
Yep. And they actually, you're able to buy them in units, which honestly I think would be very cool to actually see Great Stags become a unit choice.
Yeah, you know what? They don't have a monstrous cavern, you know,
exactly.
Unit choice, so that'd be
The eighth is going. I think that's very, very cool. And I forget. There was one other thing that I looked at and I thought like, ooh, look at this. Unicorns, that was it. Great unicorns. Did you see that?
No,
Just say you didn't read it.
Nice.
Just
when I got into the character sheets, I was skipping past.
As always, Nathan skimmed the book as opposed to reading it.
It's like a white dwarf to me. That's really how much I care about this book.
I really like it. Okay, so let's get on to a bit of the spell casting, which is obviously what this book is all about. They call them cantrips. I think that's a stupid name, so I'm just going to call them common magic spells. We've got Magic Duel, the Transportation spell, and Unbind Monster. Each of these spells are muted. They cast like gut magic, which means they all go off on a 3+, which is very cool. You kind of cast it with that last dice to kind of fuck your opponent up a little bit. And they are integral to the game, primarily because of Magic Duel and Transportation.
Those two are really huge.
Is built around taking those magic fulcrums and kind of pushing people out of them. It does make the deployment of your army, and I don't know if a lot of people have thought about this yet, it does make the deployment of your army exceptionally important, because you have to make sure that you've got a leadership, a general with very high leadership, who's in range with a BSB of your wizards in the magic fulcrum, so that when Magic Duel shows up, because it doesn't say unmodified leadership, it just says their leadership. Oh,
yeah.
Fuck it. It does say unmodified leadership. Okay, if you're not high elves, you're fucked. I take it back. Son of a bitch.
You know what, like I said, I do think they're interesting, but I mean, I even look at it a little bit differently, because you're looking at it saying, you know, your last dice, but I mean, all of the big spells rely on the magic fulcrums and who has control relative to each other. So I mean, if I want to cast the biggest doom and gloom spells, A, I need a fulcrum, and B, I need to have outright more than you do. So for me, I look at those, you know, those common magic spells that everyone knows. those cantrips, whatever you want to call them. Calentrops. There we go. They're like cough drops.
Exactly. I've got splinters in my feet. That's why I'm thinking of calentrops.
Hey, but really, it to me, it looks like, you know, if you want to throw your massive amount of dice and you want to try to get off your magma storm or your lore of life, I bring a unit back from the dead kind of spell, you need to be able to exert your dominance over those fulcrums. So you need to be looking at it and saying, I need to duel you because I need to push you off, or I need to teleport myself onto an unoccupied one, so that way I have that dominance that I need and I can start casting my giant spells.
Right.
So I mean, for me, those are my openers. Like, whereas you're just like, oh, your last dice, you can fuck him. But I'm like, no. That is straight up where I would open, because he's also looking at that, and it might draw some dispel dice.
And for a lot of the big cataclysm spells, for about half of the lores, you only have about a 12 to an 18 inch range. So being able to transport, like, open your magic phase with a transport into an empty fulcrum, and you go to the other side of the table where his army is all sitting, then you've got the ranges that you need to actually do that kind of damage.
Well, that and did you catch how deployment works?
Yes.
You know, you can deploy within 6 inches of the fulcrum. So, yes. I mean, if the fulcrum is further ahead than your deployment zone, you're able to deploy units around to protect it. So, again, being able to magic duel a user off and then teleport yourself into that now vacated one puts all of your monster spells directly in range if he deployed around his fulcrum. So it's just, you know, there are some definite interesting things that you can do. And that's why, again, I say that this game is Warhammer's Lord of the Rings. You know, if you have two guys that are willing to just have fun with it and joke and drink and do whatever, you're going to have a lot of fun. You have a lot of options.
I don't know.
But as soon as, like I said, as soon as someone decides to cross that douche line, there's no going back. Like, it just stops being fun for the
I don't know.
Guy.
Like, I didn't, like, I see a couple of odd combos, quote unquote combos, in this book so far. But really, when I was reading through it, I didn't really see anything that was game breaking. These are the types of things that people are going to go online and bitch on the forums about and say, like, oh, it's so broken, it's so crazy, it's this, it's that. But I think that there's so much of it available. So much of it,
see,
that it does kind of even the playing field.
No, absolutely. And I'm not even looking at the cataclysm spells, because honestly,
I'm talking everything.
You know, because honestly, when you look at a spell and you're like, a 35 plus to cast, I get 6 dice max, because they didn't take that away.
Yes.
You know, so really, you know, what I find really interesting about casting those monster spells is I can't irresistible it on a double 6, so fuck you, Teclis.
Right.
Yes, I said it. You know, you don't get the auto cast on doubles. You literally have to get the naked 30, you know, the 35, or
no,
if you're
no,
a level
no,
4
no.
or the
you're
31
you're
plus.
Forgetting about Twister.
No, but that's what I was saying, is really it comes down to Twister. Because if your Twister dial gives you the plus 5 to cast, now all of a sudden your spells are getting attainable. But I mean, I don't really see, like, I bet you could go through an entire game of Storm of Magic and no one would get off one of those spells.
One of the dominant spells, yeah.
Dominance, well, yeah, because, specific. Yeah, one of your dominance ones. I mean, you know, the bigger spells that are casting on 15s and 20s and 25s, very attainable. I mean, fuck, my level 2 wizard all day today has been casting,
right,
3d6 fireballs,
right,
on an 18 plus. So, I mean, like, fuck, right, it's easy.
But that's
it happens.
But that's what I'm telling, that's kind of what I'm saying to you, is that I think you're looking at the extremes right now, because, like, Lore of Fire, Cataclysm, highest spell, 25. Lore of Beasts, highest one, 25. Lore of Light, highest one, 25. Lore of Metal, highest one, 25. Lore of Life, highest one, 30. Lore of Heavens, the highest one is 20. The other two are 10 and 15, for fuck's sake. Lore of Shadow, the highest one, 25. Lore of Death, highest one, 25. Dark Magic, 30. High Magic, 20. Like, there only are one or two, I would say probably three or four spells. I think the highest one is the Slan one, the Great Evening, or the level.
Yeah,
field bullshit.
The Equalizer.
That actually is, you have to cast it on a 35.
Fair enough. No, but I mean, even then, you know, even when you go through all of those, there really aren't any, like, I think the life one can be game breaking with the, you know, pick a unit that's dead, you bring it back sans characters, you know, that's
right.
That's huge. Same with the death one with the crystal maze, I thought was potentially game breaking, where it's like, look, the unit can do absolutely nothing, and then you roll a dice, 30,
right,
30, you know, 1 in 3 chance they're gone.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, yes, but I mean, you having to get the dominance, especially when the game starts with, I have two, you have two. So, I mean, you can't even cast that spell. You don't have the option.
Right.
Again, I don't know. I don't really see that. But for me, it's, you know, exactly what you were saying, where it's just like, oh, but your wood elves are able to bring the demons and the this and the that. It's just like, you know, I've always said that team games of Warhammer are broken because there isn't the game balance in it, and it's really the same thing. Like, for me, I think just sticking to pacts and magic, you know, magic items, and saying, you know what, I'm not even gonna, like, I'm not banking on getting a cataclysm spell off, I think you're still, like, it's still, like I said, just you're able to cross that douche threshold where it's just like, and things just stop being fun.
But listen, I mean, honestly, you comparing this to War of the Ring is overkill, okay? Because War of the Ring, that douche threshold involves playing the army with one unit that can never lose. Never lose.
No,
so,
don't,
I mean,
don't
like,
wrong.
There's nothing like that in this book. Like,
see, I have never read War of the Rings, and that's why I was just saying Lord of the Rings, because that was even, like, back in the pre-War of the Ring days.
Nah, you're wrong.
That was the truth of Lord of the Rings, where it's just, like, it's an okay game if you have two guys that are willing to approach the game with the exact same sort of mentality, and they knew what they were doing. You know, when you had that social contract, everything was great. But
you're speaking secondhand, though, because how much fucking Lord of the Ring did you even play? One game?
Three, and then I decided to give my army away because that game was garbage.
I gave all my armies away, too. But no, I mean, but back in the day, like, Lord of the Rings was a very quaint game, but all it made you want was just to play Warhammer, because it was just so simple. I mean, it was the difference between chess and checkers, and that I always refer to Lord of the Rings as being Warhammer's, what did I always say? Warhammer is to Lord of the Rings as Lego is to Duplo. You know? Like, that's just all it comes down to. But okay, back on topic here, because we are running long. The lores of magic with the cataclysm spells, which of those stood out to you? Like, when you looked at them, which one of them were you just like, ooh, this makes me want to use this on my demons?
Beasts. Good lord. An army-wide Wisson's Wild Form that grants Swift Stride? Are you mad?
And magic resist? Yeah.
Yeah, like, good lord.
I thought that one was really cool. I was so impressed with Lore of Fire when I was reading through it, to be perfectly honest. The freaking 66 strength 4 magic missile. I just thought that was hilarious. But honestly...
And then the magma vortex is like strength 10 death.
When I got to Lore of Heavens, I was like, done. Lore of Heavens. I'm playing a slan with Lore of Heavens for my very first game when I play a Storm of Magic game, because it's got... I will have three spells that act as a wind blast.
Yes.
In a single army from one caster. And I think that is the most hilarious bullshit I've ever seen. Because I love how the basic spell...
blow the magical vortexes.
Yes, that was it. I could blow the magical vortexes right back on top of their own army. And I thought that was utterly hilarious because it casts on a 15. 15! With my slan, that's nothing. Nothing. Like, I will be blowing his guys... And I understand how bad that sounds right now.
You know what? I think we should just... That's Jada Gamercast for tonight.
No. I suck a meat. Guys. It's all good, dude. I got the wedding ring on, dude. I can be as gay as I want and still claim I'm straight. Everybody loves it. No. It was Lore of Heavens. I thought to myself, like, that would easily be the most fun shit I've ever seen. I absolutely had to laugh at it. Lore of Shadow and Lore of Death, I thought were pretty... meh. I love the fact that Lore of Death has three remain in plays as their abilities. I thought that was huge, because one of the big things in this book is that any of the cataclysm spells that are remain in plays are game breaking. They hit so damn hard. And it wasn't until I actually got to kind of the end of the lists of magic that I kind of stopped thinking in that box of 8th edition and kind of the game that we know right now, of saying, like, that spell is game breaking and this spell is game breaking and this spell is game breaking. It became very clear at that point that there was so much that breaks what we imagine as 8th edition that it really does create its own game. And I think that's why it's kind of fun, and that's what's kind of drawn my interest with it. Lore of Vampires has some cool stuff. Dark Magic and High Magic are both pretty meh. It's just kind of...
Oh, are you kidding me? Dark Magic's I blow up the fulcrum and kill the wizard on top? Bullshit. Like, that's huge.
But it only has a 3-inch range.
Fair.
I mean, fine, putting a wizard on a Pegasus, you can get into 3 inches, but you're sacrificing a wizard if you don't get it. And if you lose that wizard... I mean, wizards are so important in this game because you have to keep them alive and keep them on those fulcrums. So literally,
goblins and Skaven win. Look, I have 17 level 1 warblock engineers. I mean, I'm good. I'm just gonna cycle those bitches through.
No.
They're 15 points. You know, a warblock engineer is 15 points.
No,
right?
And I get that. I get it. Don't get me wrong, right? But it's just, yeah.
It'd be hilarious.
Spells like the lore of the other lores were all interesting. I mean, gut magic was something that stood out for me, obviously. The wood elves and the lizard men I was taking a look at. The great leveler, I think, is really hilarious for the lizard men because I played that army with one slan and I cast that spell. Literally every single character in your army dies and you have to lose units to match my units. So it just turns into a game of Warhammer with no characters where the magic fulcrums mean nothing.
Oh, dude. And but even like, then, wow. Even beyond that, if you kill all the characters, but you played the army that was just like, no, my army is the Saurus Death Star block of 50.
Right.
And then like two other units, then it's just like, and his entire army gets obliterated because my Death Star is alive and suck it, Trebek.
But again, it casts on
and that's that douche threshold.
But
that's
it casts
exactly
on a 35.
You know, I don't know.
With a slant on six dice, tell me the odds.
No, admittedly, the
I've
slant
never rolled a 35, and I've played Lizard Men with the slant. I've rolled a lot of six dice.
Yeah, but I mean,
I've
wouldn't
never
get,
rolled a 35.
But couldn't he take the six dice, pop a Power Stone on the same turn, and use his ability to be throwing nine dice at it?
Nope, Power Stone and everything specifically says it cannot add to the max number of dice you would normally throw. So six is the max. Like you.
Fair enough. No.
Like, you would have to hit the high magic bonus of +3. You'd have to hit the high magic bonus of +3. You'd have to be a level 4, right? Which obviously a slant is. And you would have to roll
a lot of Yahtzee.
A lot of sixes. Like, Yahtzee. This is such an over-the-top spell. Building an army around this is just ridiculous.
Oh, I know. No, but I mean, like, less ridiculous and a lot more attainable, though, is if you go Lore of Metal and not even touching their Cataclysm Vortex of Hilarity.
Yeah.
the list that we were that was thrown around today was 300 zombies, and then you give them a 2+ ward and Rune Fangs. Can't lose. It hits everything and explodes them. And it costs, like, no points because they're fucking zombies. And that's why, again, like, I'm just like, that is the kind of douche threshold that the Storm of Magic is capable of.
The magical,
and again,
the amount
when you start adding
vortexes.
In where you're just like, you know what my vampire counts need? A bloodthirster. And you're just like, fuck off. Like, it's just, that's why I'd look at it. And I'm just like, it's a fun game if, again, two people who are looking to get the exact same kind of game, you know, they have that sort of meeting of the minds, and they understand that no one is going to go ahead and just be a dick about it.
But dude,
and that's
everyone can take a bloodthirster. It evens the playing field. Like, this is what you're missing as far as I'm concerned. You're missing the fact that it's not just somebody saying, I'm going to take this list, and with a bloodthirster, it does this, 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 and this. Literally, everyone can take a bloodthirster. There are so many game-wrecking combinations that's what's fun about the game, is that it's just whose bullshit combination is going to hit the mark first, and then you all laugh as you're literally just picking up trays of guys and pulling them off the table. The sheer number of magical vortexes that you can put out because every single one of your casters, even if he's a fucking level 1, is going to be able to cast these fucking Cataclysm magical vortexes. It's just like, there's so many of them. Like, there's so much stuff out there that just makes you laugh your ass off. I mean, there's stuff that pops bloodthirsters on a 5 or a 6. Like, it's just, there's stuff out there that just you have to just laugh at. But anyways,
okay. No, but I mean, but I think that exactly proves my point. It is, you know, I could never imagine playing in a tournament that had.
Okay,
any
but you're going back
magic.
To the tournament, and that's why I said it would need that logistical side of things, because it would have to be like a bonus stupid throwaway round.
I don't know, you know, as much as I do, you know, I'm having fun with the Warhammer tournament. They kind of had one of those stupid bonus rounds where it was basically a game of D&D with a hero from your army.
Okay, but we've established that's low on the geek hierarchy, okay?
It's true, but I mean, at the end of
the
day,
geek hierarchy, not lower.
Yeah. fucking, you know, but like I said, it's just like when you add in those stupid compulsory things, it's just like, but I don't want to do it and I'm not having fun. And it's just, it's not my cup of tea. It's not something that I want to do. So that's why it's just like, if there was ever a tournament that was, you know, oh, we have a Storm of Magic bonus round, I just wouldn't show up. It would just be one of those things where it's just like, as a gamer, you know, like I said, I've said it before, you know, if you don't want to support something in your community, if it's not your cup of tea, don't pay the TO the money.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's just supporting that. And
I think that would be fun.
Because I don't think that Storm of Magic lends itself to it. And I mean, I just...
Yep. I think Storm of Magic as an optional bonus round, I think that would be a lot of fun. At this point, I mean, this is, again, first impressions. I haven't played a game yet. I don't know how the game plays quite yet.
Yeah.
I haven't started sorting through this book looking for combos. I most definitely haven't gone on the forums to see the fucking D-bags building their
watchtower
lists with the floating watchtower.
I'm going to hover my watchtower of archers around.
It's just so funny, though. Anyways, but like I think that's kind of like this whole idea just removes this. Like, I love Warhammer. I never play Mordheim because I could never get people together who I like playing it with. I love Warhammer, but I was never able to play, you know, any of the other additional things that they had built into Warhammer. It was always just like, Warmaster. Okay, but I'd rather play Warhammer, you know? Mm-hmm. This game is still a game of Warhammer. I think that's the beauty of it. It's still a game of Warhammer, but it's so kooky and crazy and fucking retarded that you can just... It really, really enjoy yourself the whole way through. Okay, let's get on to items here. The Dawnstar sword is a runefang on
crack. I keep thinking about Dogstar, Keanu's band. Like, every time I was reading that, I'm like, are you serious? Is this where they got this name from? Dogstar?
Whoa. Blade of Last Resort, as we talked about, hilarious. there's a lot of other items here that I think are hilarious. I honestly... looked at the Woodwaker wand.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that you would have loved that because that's just hilarious. The fact that you can turn a forest into an actual playable unit on the table. I thought that was utterly fantastic. And the fact that unit has 30 strength 5 attacks.
Yeah.
There's a possibility that it has hatred and regeneration. Fuck me. I mean, like, I just thought that was hilarious. And okay, like, it's 200 points. Clearly it makes sense that this thing is one use only at 200 points that gives you a fucking Uber unit. I mean, you're basically buying a unit, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's a good unit, too. No, and I always thought that was really hilarious with Wood Elves, since their spell was you can make new forests, and you start with a forest. So I'm just like, man, I'm just going to be, like, standing there with, like, the fucking sea of trees. And then once you start getting close, you're like, oh, my God, that flank's going, bam.
Right.
Unit.
Well, yeah, like, you could do a level 4 with a Woodwaker wand, and then another level 4 with the Living Deadwood staff. The one that basically allows you to create forests on the table every time that you cast that spell. And then it's a blood forest that can potentially do 46 strength 7 hits to anything inside of it.
Yeah.
The giant.
Well, and that was what I thought was crazy about the, you know, almost all of, like, the terrain spells where you're just like, no, just put the unit inside and fuck them up. And
yes.
You're like, oh.
Oh, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's every single one of these items and spells is hilarious. They're not good. They're not amazing. They're hilarious. Like, this is the Monty Python of Warhammer.
It absolutely is.
Like the giant kin helm.
Awesome. Which one was that again?
That's the one where you turn into a giant.
Oh, right.
There's just a lot of really cool things in here that I thought were hilarious. The picket fence was fantastic. The flute. The Wisson's weighted dice I thought was very funny. But a lot of the items actually I find are a bit, I think we're not going to really see them because between packs and between bound creatures, you're going to go for the creatures in the packs every time.
See,
it's such a stronger game.
I don't know if you're good. Like, I think pacts are a done deal. I think everyone's going to take the pact, but because every single wizard in the game knows the
cataclysm.
Well, yeah, knows the unbind. That's when you're just like, I don't know. Like, are people gonna shell out like 775 points to get one of the exalted greater demons, knowing that one bad, you know,
but did you read the unbind?
Unlucky... Sorry,
did you read the unbind?
Yeah, but it was one of the
or
first
do you skim it?
I read. No, I read it
because the only it only removes them on a five. On a yeah. six, they just basically become, we want everything to die.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
right. But
they're,
I mean,
like, there's a chance that they
can
get frenzy.
Making them stupid
yeah,
and,
but
and things like that.
BSB,
so.
General's Leadership,
yeah,
gives
fair.
A fuck. Like, I think that the Unbind is funny, but again, it only casts on a three. With the amount of dice out there on the table right now, it's like, okay, but, like, I just have to know that I'm going to be stopping that shit, you know? So I'm not that worried about it. All right, let's get into the monsters here. We are running a bit long, so obviously we've got the things right out of the gates that they're trying to sell us, the Chimera, the Manticore. The Griffin I thought was hilarious because Griffins aren't that good, but you look at all the special abilities that you can give them, and they're suddenly amazing. Like giving the Griffin the Always Strike First special rule, fantastic.
Yes.
I thought that was very, very cool, and you know, a lot of fun. Hippogriffin, same thing. Lots of cool abilities. The Hydra, you can give them poison attacks, which is funny. Oh my god, Uber Harpies. I saw this entry and I was just like, Harpies, are you fucking shitting me? They suck to begin with. And then I actually looked at the stat line for the Harpies and I was like, okay, well, they've got two attacks, sure. They can fly, sure. Wait a second, I can give them flaming attacks? And they count as magical? Wait, I can make them poison? Wait, I can make them poison killing blow? Oh my god, these 14-point harpies are fucking amazing!
Yeah, unlike harpies in general.
Fucking uber harpies. I'm just like, this is retarded. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. They've gone from one of the worst units in the game to being one of the most unbelievable units in the game for 3 points more. A model. And oh my god, I was laughing my ass off. Cold One's hilarious. Carnosaur, fun. Stegadon, good times. The Pegasi. Being able to just take a unit of Pegasus, I think that would actually be really cool.
See, that's what I thought about the War Lions of Trace. I was just like, fucking unit size 2 to 20 of War Lions? Hot.
Like 5, yeah. But the unicorns were the ones that really stood out to me because they got a 5+ ward save, immune to psychology, magic resistance 2. They got the +2 strength on the charge, yada, yada, yada. But they keep the movement 10, which is important for you because you can have unicorns in your gay elf army. But there is a great unicorn in there. And the great unicorn has 3 wounds. He has higher strength and higher toughness. Same initiative, an additional attack. And it's just like, wow. Are we going to start seeing again when the new Wood Elf book comes? Are they going to have great stags and great unicorns? And are you going to be able to use them in that way where, you know, you're putting them into units of other unicorns and you're actually having these impact hits or you're charging like knights, which is something that the Wood Elves definitely lack.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say because, I mean, I can take a unicorn with my Glamour Weave Kindred right now.
Right.
And that unicorn is, I think, stat line identical to the Royal Unicorn, but has Magic Resist 3. So, I mean, it's a little bit better.
Yeah, but Magic Resist is very different now. So
Oh, no, absolutely. It's not what it used to be. And, you know, if
but you also have a 5+ ward save with Magic Resist 2.
Yes.
That's what we see in here. So I think that definitely makes up for it.
Especially because it's not the stupid wood elf. Oh, if it's magical, no ward save for you.
But again, great stags. 5+ ward save, D3 impact hits, enchanted attacks, and their strength 5. Like, it just, you know, like, I'm really seeing a lot of cool things for the wood elves in the future, just with kind of what we're seeing right now. Great Eagles.
See, I wouldn't mind doing up a unit of 5 of them because that would just be hilarious.
Yes, yes.
See, I wish they were unit size 6 because then I could go 3x2 and get a rank bonus.
It'd be funny. So, yeah, War Lions of Grace, the Wevran, They've all got these abilities. The spiders, I really do kind of like the idea that you can take an Arachnarok spider as a bound creature. I think that's actually really cool because, like, even when I played Tom, he had an Arachnarok spider. Did pretty well for him that game. It was a lot of fun. And, like, he hadn't glued the howdah down, so, like, you just pull the howdah off, and it's just like, boom, toss that thing in there and have some fun with the Storm of Magic. Trolls, same rules as trolls from the Orc and Goblin book. Giant,
and the
same rules.
Soul types, and yeah.
New type of giant, Bone Grinder Giant, which is meant for killing monsters. Awesome stuff.
I love how it's the Forge World moment.
Yes. That was my other point, actually, when we hit that. Was, as you start going through the book at this point, you actually realize that a lot of these creatures that they're adding to the bound monsters are Forge World monsters that had been sold as spawns or sold as just regular old ass giants, but they were these massive, massive models that just towered above everything else. The Saigor, the Gorgon, very, very cool. Dragon Ogres, hey, they're in there, so the Shaggoth is actually worth something again. Razor Gore Herd, good stuff. Chaos War Mammoth, another Forge World. Chaos Warhounds, Chaos Spawn, another Forge World even there. All of the Greater Daemons, which is freaking fantastic because they're really cool. The dragons. Oh my god, the dragons. Just reading through the rules for the Emperor Dragon, I mean, just makes me want to shit myself. I mean, it's nines across the board with a leadership 10 and their magic users. And you're just like, are you fucking shitting me?
Well, I mean, you knew the Emperor Dragon had to do that because the Great Red Dragon was eights across the board.
Yes.
And anyone with Transformation of Kaidan can do that.
Yes. You know, and it's just like, it's this amazing, amazing thing to actually see a great or an Emperor Dragon on the table where you can actually play it as like an Emperor Ice Dragon or like an Emperor Storm Dragon. It's just, you know, a lot of really, really cool stuff that they've kind of put into just the idea of dragons, which I love. I honestly really do like that. Chaos Dragon, super cool. You can even get an Emperor Chaos Dragon, which is fucking retarded. Did you read the Emperor Chaos Dragon?
No idea.
Yeah, same stat line, but it still gets two breath weapons. Yeah, I know, right? Giant Spine Chaos Beast, same as Forge World. The Cockatrice, they really, really want you to buy it. The Rhinox, here's one for the Ogre players, like me. We don't see that stupid turning rule with the Rhinox, which is really great. So we actually are probably going to expect to see that in the new Ogre Kingdoms book with the Rhinox in there, where they're not going to have that stupid rule. And they have Frenzy as a standard, which is great. So we're actually probably going to see Rhinox Cavalry being frenzied in the new book as well. And they have D3 impact hits, which is not the same as the D3 bull charge. So I think it's very, very likely. And I don't think anybody out there right now who plays Ogres or who knows the Ogre Kingdom's army book thinks for even a moment that they're going to keep that stupid fucking bull charge rule. They're just going to turn it into impact hits. And that's just going to be the end of it, I think.
Yeah, or they'll do away with it. But, what, you know, there's no way the whole... Because, I mean, in 7th edition, how did you play against Ogres? Well, as soon as he lined up in 12 and you couldn't charge him, you just marched up inside of 6 so he didn't impact.
You didn't get impact hits, and then all of a sudden his combat was nerfed. The other really interesting thing about Rhinox, stubborn. When the fuck did Rhinox become stubborn? I would be happy as fuck if my Rhinox riders were stubborn. Because I can tell you right now they're not. Because they've run off the table more times than I can count. Again, I think that there's a lot of really cool kind of interesting clues in here to what we're going to see for kind of 8th edition books. Sabertusks, same stuff. Yetis, cheaper. Great. They definitely needed to be cheaper. There's no fucking doubt in that. And as you said, for all of those Chaos Dwarf players who held out, there's your Great Taurus and rules that you can expect to see with the Great Taurus if we do actually see a Chaos Dwarf book. And the Lamassu, which I think is super awesome because he actually is a wizard.
Yes.
Did you read the entry for the Lamassu?
Yep.
Very, very cool stuff. I think that was actually just a lot of fun.
He's a monster. Toads. By the breath weapon.
Right,
always
right, right.
By the breath weapon.
Plague Toads, right out of Forge World. The Fen Beasts. Boy, I wish I had actually kept all my old Fen Beast models. I think I had 6 of them at one point because I was going to use them for mounts for Plague Riders. And I ended up selling them all. And I'm just sitting there looking at this going like, shit, I should have fucking saved my Fen Beast. Monstrous Undead, please.
Dude, regenerate 3+ on those bitches for next to nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Regenerate 3+, Unbreakable, Unstable, Stupidity, Swamp Rider, Regen, Always Strikes Last. I don't give a fuck because they're Strength 5, Toughness 5 with 4 wounds.
Yeah.
Bitch, please. 65 points, for fuck's sake. 65! Ugh. I hate you people. Gay Ultimate Warrior, the Dark Emissary, you guys know those guys. Here's where we start getting into the really goofy stuff, is in the very last page, of the monster bit. You've got Fimir, Balefiend. Danny actually has the original model posted.
Oh my god, really?
Yes, it's hilarious. But he's a magic user that you can get there into the game. Again, just funny, fucking hilarious bullshit. Why the hell wouldn't you? And Zotes, magic users, again, Lore of Life, and they get uber awesome bonuses to Lore of Life if you actually take a Zote. So I'm honestly thinking of converting up a Zote because I do have some extra lizard pieces. So I think that'll actually be really fun. Okay, so we're kind of getting to the end of the book here. We are running a bit over time, so we're just going to get into the Sorceress Packs. We have talked about them before. At this point, I mean, obviously, there's just untold riches worth of combo action that you can toss into this shit at this point. And kind of, I mean, as you said before, Nathan, you think you're going to see a lot of people just aiming toward the Sorceress Packs.
Yeah. No, honestly, I think...
Because it is just bigger armies.
It's bigger armies, and I mean, it's fucking allies. Because, I mean, really... The you can get undead or demons, which are both fantastic choices for any army. And when you look at your compulsories, everything, if you're going to take the pact, you just need the 1+ core units. And then depending on whether, you know, what you're playing, Tomb Kings need the king as well as the Hierophant. And vampires need an actual vampire to command it. But other than that, like, it's just like, you know, go to town. Like, so it's just,
yeah,
you know, like I said, because like for me, if I was, you know, if I was going to be playing this, I would take that that enchanted item to make the trees into a unit with my wood elves, and then I just take all the rest of my points and take blood letters with a herald and just be like, get some. Like, it's just like, the unit, or actually honestly, I'd probably take my Nurgle because they wreck shit in the face, but and their tar pit, which my wood elves don't have. But I really think that that's just what people are gonna lean towards. Is they're gonna take some of the really over the top magic items. They're gonna take these, because at the end of the day, even if we're not counting cataclysm spells and things like that could pop a monster, there are still cannonballs in the old world.
Yeah,
and I think that's why, you know, no one's gonna bet the farm on a big 300 or 400 point monster. They might take some smaller units like harpies or a unit of stags or yetis,
but there
or something
aren't that,
like that
many 300 to 400 point monsters. Like, the points cost of these monsters are dirt cheap.
They are, but I mean, you know, like, for example, if I took a Lamassu, buffed him up to a level 4 and gave him a breath weapon, now he's about what, 300 points?
Okay, but he's one of
that's
the few.
That's my point.
Right, we're not talking great dragons and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of monsters in here. Like, the Hydra. The Hydra's still under 200 points in this book. You know, like, I think that the people... You can't really underestimate the monsters. But going back to the Sorcerer's Packs, I think one of the really interesting things about this is that these units that you're taking, from what I can see or from what I've read, are not restricted to composition. So... if you want to take this massive unit of Graveguard and put them out there on the table, but, oh, wait, I have to take a core choice first. Well, I'm just going to take 10 zombies. Core choice. Bang.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just,
dude,
like, and
10
there we
zombies,
go.
10 wraiths with a banshee.
Yes, exactly, right?
And your vampire, and your geared up combat vampire who you made ethereal as well, right? Because fuck it, that's why.
Why the fuck wouldn't you?
Or
he'll
Blood
never,
Knights.
Ever get out of that fucking tower.
Hey, Lang, did you know that your what your lizards really needed was 5 Blood Knights with your vampire lord?
Hey, like I said, it's so over the top, but everything is. And I think that that's what kind of balances out in that fun way, is it's just like, You get to about halfway through the book, and you're just so tired of thinking everything that you look at. It's game breaking. But, like, yeah, Storm of Magic is about breaking the game. It's about playing you know, it's about playing a game where all of the people who whine and complain about how overpowered Magic was look at this shit and go, yeah, I guess it's not that bad. I guess Purple Sun really ain't that bad.
You know, maybe that was the whole point, is Games Workshop was just like, we're going to feed the trolls a buffet so they will shut the fuck up.
Well, I also think a big part of it, honestly, is that when they were doing 8th edition, they obviously had a lot of spells written up. And then the ones that we see are the ones that made the cut, where they felt like this was the most balanced, these were the most fun, and then everything else got shuffled into a pile, and they just said, like, look, we got, like, 100 spells here. Like, we could totally make a Magic phase of the game and just, like, make these spells over the top, uber powerful, and just go crazy. And so I kind of get that idea, because there's just so many spells in this book. But yes, the Sorcerer's Pact is very interesting, because you can kind of skip straight to rare choices with those 10-man core choices and a hero. But again, we are talking about undead and demons. So it's a little bit more of an interesting game, because all three of these armies are somewhat dependent on the characters.
Yes. So, well, like,
Sorcerer's Pacts are still going to be... I'm sorry?
I think the two undead units are. I mean, you know, with demons, you can get away with it a lot. Like, if you're going to – it depends what you're looking for.
But you're still dependent on your heralds.
If you're taking a big core unit, all you wanted to do was take, like, a unit of 6 blood crushers with, you know, out of the rare choices, and you took, like, 5 furies to be your core, congrats. Like, that's all it is.
Right.
You know. So, you know, yes, you're right. The undeads definitely need the characters, but even then, I mean, you know, kitted vampire lord added in is fucking ridiculous.
But again, so, it's a lot of points. A vampire lord is 400 points minimum, essentially. That's what you're going.
And then 10 zombies go.
Right, but you're talking about taking a character and 10 zombies, and that's a huge chunk of your allotted 625 points in a 2500 point game. And then you make up the rest of that with maybe a couple items or an additional monster. I mean, like, you're going to feel like a chump when your opponent walks up to the table with a standard vampire with a bunch of extra kit to make him a caster, bunkered at a 10-man unit, and he's got a big-ass unit of fucking Graveguard in the middle of the table with a fucking Lamassu. You know what I mean? Like, there's just much, much better choices than just dumping that all into one choice. Now, I mean, like, the Bloodthirsters, the Greater Daemons, stuff like that, those definitely are awesome choices, but the majority of them are over 625 points. So, I mean, you're only going to see those in those 3,000-point games where it's just massive, massive amounts of stuff. So I wouldn't necessarily say again, I don't agree with you that I think that you're looking at a lot of the extremes. I mean, we are kind of getting to the end of the show here. We're way over. You had a stupidity check, but I'm going to say let's save it for next week.
Oh, see, I was going to write it. I have a triple threat of stupidity checks all from our overlord. So I was just going to write a blog post about it and post it up probably middle of the week.
Okay, I think that's the best bet because, yeah, we're about 20 minutes over at this point.
Oh, dude, and I could talk another hour on my triple threat
easily,
of fucking
easily.
Stupidity.
If I have any understanding of where you're going, I think that we definitely could. But okay, let's get back to Storm of Magic here, kind of as a quick follow-up to what we see here. I mean, for me, I think it looks like a lot of fun. I think that I like the book. I like the models. I love the fact that, you know, as a fantasy player who's been playing for a long time and has a bunch of old models and has a bunch of different armies where I can mix and match pieces from them and kind of play goofy, fun games, I think it looks like a lot of fun to me. I do actually want to give it a try. I want to see if it really stands out or if it is just what you're thinking of, which is just that there's that line and crossing that line just turns the game into a two-turn fuckfest every time that you play. But at the same time, I think that there's so much potential in this book, and there's so many clues in this book to kind of what we can expect for the rest of 8th edition that, I don't know, the charm of it is just selling. It's just really, really sold itself on me.
Eh, good for you. No, I don't know. Like I said, I'm so indifferent on the book. I don't think that, it's game breaking, but you know, I don't think there's anything there where you're just gonna be like that's bullshit. But for me, I just don't care. As like I said, I read it and I'm just like, it's neat. To me, this is Warhammer's Apocalypse. I think people are gonna be, some people will be excited off the bat, they're gonna play a couple games or a handful, and then they're never gonna touch it. And a year from now, and this is something that Kyle was saying, so you know, Kyle, I'm totally stealing it. A year from now, the only people playing this are going to be Games Workshop stores when they're desperate for hobby nights. You know, they're like, right, I don't know what to put on Friday night. Let's do Storm of Magic. Okay. And that's, to me, what I think it really is going to come down to.
I do agree there.
It's, you know, it's just going to be a okay distraction, yeah, from time to time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like I said, I've played two games of Apocalypse. I will never play a third. You know, and I really think that Storm of Magic is going to fall into that, where it's just like, there are some neat things, you're going to play it once or twice, and then you're just going to be like, yeah, you know what, I'm done. That was fun for what it was.
Yeah, but I think comparing this to Apocalypse is a bit off, just because of the fact that the points levels are not at that high point, and this does allow for Storm of Magic games at actually very small levels, where you can play what is essentially your standard Warhammer-sized game. Like playing a 2,000-point list with those 500 extra points is no bigger than playing, obviously, a 2,500-point game, which is pretty common for Warhammer 8th Edition right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think that's the big key difference, though, is whereas Apocalypse, you know, doesn't try to romance you, you know. It's just, you know, hey, look, it's 3,000, yeah, it's 3,000 points. You can put the money on the dresser and then get into bed, or you can get the fuck out. Like, that's Apocalypse. But I mean, you know, that is what Storm of Magic does have over it, because you don't have to, you know, just fork over the money. But for me, again, like I said, every single thing that you said about why you were excited about Storm of Magic is every single sales pitch that Games Workshop had for Apocalypse. It's for older gamers with lots of armies and lots of points, and they're able to throw it all together, and they're able to have fun and do these crazy things. And I'm just like, fuck, I've heard this before.
Well, and that's, I mean, a huge, I was difference for, yeah,
the company when Apocalypse came, yeah, out. Like, I have heard this before, and this is the exact same sales pitch that they used for, yeah, Apocalypse. And that's why I'm just like, I'll probably play one or two games, and
yeah,
like Apocalypse, I'll be done after that forever. No,
and I definitely see that point. I'm not going to say that you're utterly wrong in that respect, because I mean, definitely for me, I look at this and I kind of think to myself, like, no, I'm not going to play a ton of these games. I think a year from now, I will not be pulling this off of my shelf, unless after a few games I really do kind of start seeing the genius of it and I realize that, oh, the developers had something crazy in mind. But I mean, obviously, I can't actually do that until I start playing a couple of games of it. But it does appeal more to gamers like me, because I'm looking at this right now. I've bought the book, I've bought the cards, and I do not expect to buy anything else for Storm of Magic. I'm going to make my own bullshit fulcrums so that I can squeak by and just make the game work. I'm going to use the extra shit that I have that I can add into this, because I have the opportunity to do so. Unlike you, where you really only have two options. The dragon, the hydra, and your demons with your wood elves. And that's it for you, right? You would actually, yep, have to go out and buy a lot more shit. Whereas for me, it's just like, ah, I've got it all. It's all at my fingertips. Ha ha ha. I can do whatever the fuck I want. So for me, it's gravy. But for a lot of people out there, I would definitely understand where they just look at it going like, but I don't want to have to go buy a manticore. I think the cockatrice is cool, but I'm not going to buy every single monster that came out, and then I'm not going to go buy half of a vampire count's army, and I'm not going to go buy, mm-hmm, all of these bullshit magic fulcrums so that I can actually play the game, or the arcane fulcrums, or whatever the hell they're called. I mean, I really do think that they oversold themselves a lot in that respect. But I think that the rules themselves seem kooky and fun, and it's the Monty Python of Warhammer. So we'll see if it's good. Is it Life of Brian, or is it the Holy Grail? And on that note, that is Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.